Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Emor el Hakohanim, Bnei Aharon, Vyomarta Alehem, Lenefesh lo yitama be'amav. OU Israel presents.
In. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Emor. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, Tetvav, the 15th of Iyar, 5770. Last night, meaning Wednesday night, Thursday, is the 30th of the Omer, which is 4 weeks and 2 days. And on the secular calendar, April 29th. That little introduction of the melody for Yadid Nefesh, one of the melodies for Yadid Nefesh, is from an album called Beat Achon, little play on the words, B-A-E-A-T, Achon, Beat Achon, which is also means with security, from an album called West Side Zmirot. I will have a track from there shortly, but I started with a little piece of Yadid Nefesh. It's an a cappella album, perfect for listening during Sfirat HaOmer, and this particular one is devoted exclusively to the Zmirot of Friday night and Shabbat. That was followed for the second week with the laning, the Torah reading of the first verse of this week's Parsha of Emor. Last week we did both Acharei and Kedoshim, because it was a double Sedra. This time it's just Parshat Emor, and that was the first verse. We will be talking about Parshat HaShavua. Yesterday was Pesach Sheni. I want to talk a little bit about that, because it ties in with a song I would like to play later in the show. In the meantime, Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tihyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod, ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut, v'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha-omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha-makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, u'meyafela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amein. Before we continue, I want to announce that we finally put together our own website for Torah Tidbits and for Torah Tidbits Audio. It's a simplified, all-inclusive web page with links to just about everything that we do. It starts, of course, www. Which is probably not necessary, and then the word T tidbits. T-T-I-B. No, sorry. T-T-I-D-B-I-T-S. T-tidbits.com. That's it. T-tidbits.com will get you to a page where you will have the PDF files of the entire Torah Tidbits of the week, the light version, the extra light version, the Parsha Picks only, and a few other files, plus the two halves of Torah Tidbits audio. The written material gets updated sometime Wednesday night, Israel time. The Torah Tidbits audio gets updated sometime Thursday afternoon, very soon after I finish recording. In fact, it will be available on the website even before its first broadcast with Arutz Sheva, Israel National Radio, and certainly before it gets archived by them, and probably before it gets put up on OU Radio as well. So if you want to tell anybody about it, or in the future you want to find the show, I do the recording somewhere between 3 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon of Thursday, Israel time, under normal circumstances. Its first broadcast on Israel National Radio is like 8 o'clock, and then it gets repeated several times through the night and tomorrow, and then they put it up for audio on demand. I send it to the OU, send them the links, and they put it up sometime their afternoon of Thursday. So Torah Tidbits audio will be first available on ttidbits.com. There's also a link to email me, and you could give me some feedback on the website and on Torah Tidbits and on Torah Tidbits audio, and make suggestions and ask questions, whatever. It's a one-stop shopping, ttidbits.com. I mentioned earlier the a cappella album called West Side Zmirot by Beat Achon, and the particular track I would like to play for you is the Shabbat Day Zmira Ki Eshmera Shabbat, and I actually have a tie-in with this week's Sedra. Among the things mentioned in Parshat Emor, beside the whole first half, which deals with Kohanim, Kohen Gadol, and Korbanot, very Beit HaMikdash, temple-oriented, you then have a very significant pair of mitzvot, which I will speak about, Kiddush Hashem, and the other side of the coin, Chilul Hashem, sanctifying God's name, and its opposite. Then you have Parshat HaMoadim, the portion of the holidays, a full review of the cycle of biblical festivals. This is followed by the command to take pure olive oil and use it to light the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash, which happens also to be, because of its juxtaposition to the portion of the holidays, a remez, a little hint, to the future post-biblical holiday of Chanukah in the Torah. That is followed by the command of taking a measure of fine flour and bake it into 12 loaves, which are put onto the shulchan in the Beit HaMikdash, where they remain throughout the week, and when they are exchanged the following week, biyom ha-shabbat, biyom ha-shabbat, it's on Shabbat that they are placed there and replaced. V'hayta la'aron ulvanav va'achaluhu bimakom kadosh, and the loaves that are taken off, which miraculously remained fresh-tasting, were distributed to the Kohanim on duty. Ki kodesh kodashim hu lo, me'ishei Hashem chok olam. This is one of the eternal gifts to the Kohen, the lechem hapanim, the showbread. The command to put this on the shulchan is back in Parshat Terumah, where we saw first the command to build the Mikdash and everything in it, but it is discussed here in Parshat Emor. That brings us to the Zmira Ki Eshmera Shabbat, third stanza, which begins, third stanza, I guess you could call it that, Rasham Bedat Hakel. You will hear it in the song. Pay attention to when it comes. The Hebrew, Rasham Bedat Hakel, in English. Engraved in God's law is a decree to the Kohanim to prepare the showbread in his presence, meaning in the Beit HaMikdash. So his sages ruled on it, meaning on Shabbat, fasting is forbidden, except, of course, on the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. I focus in on this particular stanza, A, because it talks about Lechem HaPanim, which is related, which is within this week's Torah reading of Emor, but it makes a very important point. Bread in the Mikdash sanctifies all food. It's God's statement that whereas all living creatures need food, and as such, it is a physical, mundane item, for a Jew, he is commanded to spiritualize, to sanctify, to elevate his food, where it is not just something to sustain his hunger and to sustain his nourishment, but it is something of spiritual value. The demonstration of this is God's choice of a temple service that involved baking bread, placing the bread on the special golden table and its shelves in the Mikdash, and then, a week later, dividing it among the Kohanim who are commanded to eat it. By virtue of the fact, and this is the point of this stanza, by virtue of the fact that God incorporated food on the temple agenda, our sages said, therefore, it is forbidden to fast on Shabbat. Except for Yom Kippur, when it falls on Shabbat, that's an exception. But the concept of food on Shabbat is not merely for the practical purpose of feeding oneself. It is part of the spiritual celebration and observance of Shabbat, demonstrated in the temple, applied to every Jewish home. Rasham Bedat Hakel, it is engraved, inscribed in God's law that bread, food, is part of the temple service. Therefore, our sages of great wisdom and understanding decreed that it is forbidden to fast on Shabbat. Once again, Westside Zmirot, a cappella, no musical instruments, just voice, Ki Eshmera Shabbat.
Ki Eshmera Shabbat, Kel Ishmereini, Oti Leomeyad, Beino Veini, Oti Leomeyad, Beino Veini, Oti Leomeyad, Beino Veini. Asur metzochefet, asoterachim, gam miladaber bo, divrei terachim, divrei zchora, af divrei malachim, ege betorakel, utechak meini, oti leomeyad, beino uveini, oti leomeyad, beino uveini, Poem tzatamid, no fesh lenafshi, me le dorishon, natan kidoshim, ofen betet lechem, mishne bashishi, shishi, kacha bechol shishi, yach bil mizoni, oti leyom meyad, beino uveini, oti leyom meyad, beino uveini, Rasham bedat hakel, chogel seganav, bo laroch lechem, panim befanav, al ken itanot bo, al pi nevonav, asur levad miyo, kippur avoniyo, di leomeyad, veniyo, di leomeyad, veniyo, veniyo, hu yom mechubad, hu yom tanugim, lechem yayin tov, Basar v'dagim ha-midam limbo Ha-chornes ho-zim Ki yom z'machotu U'tesam v'ni Yoti li-omeyad V'no v'ni Yoti li-omeyad V'no v'ni Mechel melach abo Sofo le-achrit Al-kei nachabes bo Libi kivori ve'et palela elkel Arvit mishavit musaf v'gam mincha U'yar yei Oti li'omeyad Beino v'ni Oti li'omeyad Beino v'ni
Parshat Emor has 63 mitzvot out of 613, more than 10%. It is second only to Parshat Ki Teitzeh with 74, and its mitzvot are very well organized into categories. I mentioned briefly earlier that the first many of these mitzvot deal with the Kohen, Kohen Gadol, with korbanot, with invalidating features of both the Kohanim and the korbanot, and that constitutes a significant portion of the Sedra. The second significant section, significant in the meaning of many, many verses spent on it, I don't mean the relative importance of the topics, is the Chagim, which we will get to in a while. But I want to focus now on a very brief passage that is sandwiched between the two main sections of Parshat Emor, and they constitute a very, very significant pair of mitzvot. Ushmartem mitzvotai va'asitem otam. You shall preserve and keep my commandments and do them. Ani Hashem, I am God. V'lo techalalu et shem kodshi, and be very, very careful not to desecrate my holy name. V'nikdashti betoch b'nei Yisrael, and you shall rather sanctify me and my name within the Jewish world and the world at large. Ani Hashem mekadishchem, because I am God who sanctifies you. Therefore you, the Jewish people, have to sanctify me. Who am I, says God rhetorically, Hamotzi etchem me'eretz Mitzrayim l'hiot lachem le'lokim. I am the one who took you out of Egypt to make you my people, that I should be your God. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem, I am God. The two mitzvot here are the prohibition, the very serious prohibition against desecrating God's name, called in Hebrew Chilul Hashem, and the positive command, the very significant, exalted, lofty command of sanctifying God's name. What's interesting is the treatment of these two mitzvot in rabbinic literature, in Talmudic literature. There are basically three different definitions of very different types that are attributed to this pair of mitzvot. The first is martyrdom, meaning the concept, which in Hebrew is Yehoreg Va'al Ya'avor. Let me back up a few steps and see this in its perspective. If a person is confronted with a situation that is life-threatening, he may, no, more than that, he must violate Shabbat in order to save a life. He must violate the prohibitions of kashrut, if necessary, in order to save a life. Almost all mitzvot may be violated if it means saving a life. There are three significant exceptions to that: murder, incest, and adultery. Those go together, sexual immorality, and idolatry, idol worship. If a person is confronted with a situation, let's use the classic stories from Jewish history, give up your Judaism and bow down to this idol as a sign that you are forsaking your Judaism and accepting a new religion, a person must be killed rather than violate. Yehoreg v'al ya'avor. If one gives up his life in such a situation, he has committed a kiddush Hashem, a sanctification of God's name. And there is probably no greater thing that a Jew can do. If he bows to the idol in order to save his life, he has desecrated God's name, because the rule here is Yehoreg v'al ya'avor, and that's probably the worst thing a person could do. It gets a little bit more complicated than that. In time of forced conversion, all mitzvot entered the category of Yehoreg v'al yavor, and even things that were not required, even tiny customs, if it were used by an enemy as a sign of forsaking Judaism and accepting another religion, then they too became Yehoreg v'al yavor. In other words, the same God who gave us the command to keep Shabbat and said, "My Shabbat will step aside when you need to save a life," he said, idolatry does not step aside. Unfortunately, or whatever you want to call it, if it means dying rather than committing idolatry, murder, or adultery, then that's what has to be done. To do the proper thing in this kind of case is a kiddush Hashem. To do the wrong thing is a chilul Hashem. Obviously, it needs more details to flesh out the story, but that's the idea of definition number one of this pair of mitzvot from the middle of Parshat Emor. We'll be right back with at least two more definitions of Kiddush Hashem and more of Torah Tidbits audio. Listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Emor. What you just heard was the introduction to another a cappella track, this time from an album called A.K.A. Pella Platinum, A Cappella Platinum, another one of those many albums that have come out for people who want to listen to music during the Omer period but do not listen to instrumental music. The song you are about to hear we've played before with instruments, V'hi She'amda. It comes from the Pesach Seder, from the Haggadah, and it speaks of the promise that we have from God that He will protect us throughout the generations and spare us or save us from the enemies that come upon us in every generation throughout history. It should be noted, without going into too much detail, that it does not mean, I use the word spared, if you noticed, and I correct myself to saved. There's a big difference. To be spared means to walk away unscathed. We do not always walk away from encounters with our enemies unscathed, and sometimes we are very badly beaten. But we are always saved as a nation. The Jewish people is/are eternal. V'hi she'amda lanu v'lavoteinu, this is that which has stood for us and for our ancestors, shelo echad bilvad, notwithstanding the fact that there is an enemy or enemies in every generation who stands up against us to annihilate us, v'hakadosh baruch hu matzilenu mi'adam, and God saves us from their hand. That which started this half was a brief introduction. Here is the song V'hi she'amda, and the connection is simply the fact that yesterday was Pesach Sheni, and even though on Pesach Sheni in the time of the Beit HaMikdash we do not have a Haggadah, there is no mitzvah to tell the story of the Exodus, there is a mitzvah to eat the Korban Pesach, which is brought in the afternoon of the 14th of Iyar, and since it's already passed for this year, I'm not going to spend more time on it, just to say that is the connection to this song, V'hi she'amda.
V'hi she'amda la'vaseinu, V'hi she'amda la'vaseinu ve'lanu, She'lai echad b'lod amad aleinu lecha v'seinu, amad aleinu lecha v'seinu. V'hi she'amda la v'seinu, V'hi she'amda la v'seinu v'lanu, She'lai echad b'lod amad aleinu lecha v'seinu, amad aleinu lecha v'seinu. V'akadosh baruch hu matzilenu, matzilenu mi'adam. V'akadosh baruch hu matzilenu, matzilenu
Okay, let's get back to Kiddush Hashem and its opposite. A much, much different definition, but one that we have on the books to define what the Torah means when it says, do not disgrace my name, rather sanctify me. Observance of mitzvot is a combination of actions and attitude. And when a person has to answer the question, did you do a mitzvah? I don't know if I'm explaining this well, but let's continue with it. Did you say Birkat HaMazon after a meal? Yes, I did. I took the bencher. I said Birkat HaMazon. I fulfilled the requirement of the mitzvah. Did you have a passionate appreciation for God in the food that you ate, for the land of Israel, for the Torah and mitzvot which he commanded us? These are all things that we express in the text of Birkat HaMazon. That, the enhanced version of observance of a mitzvah, which comes with an enthusiasm, which comes with an understanding and appreciation, and all that could go with the actual performance of a mitzvah, that is defined as a Kiddush Hashem. One sanctifies God by performing mitzvot, and the beholder, someone who sees this happening, says, wow, this is an amazing religion, because look at how that person does what he's commanded to do. You look at somebody else, he's going through the motions. But there are some people whose performance of mitzvot is so exemplary and so accompanied by the enthusiasm and all the good attitudes that it sanctifies God's name. Conversely, a person who goes through the motions with a negative attitude, that, if projected to others, can be a desecration of his name. Totally different way of defining things. And there's a third way, which many of us grew up with constant reminders, and that is behavior. Behavior could mean something very simple and mundane. Here is a person wearing a kippah, dressed like a yeshiva person, carrying a holy book under his arm, standing at a bus stop. And he's actually engrossed in review from the book that he's holding. Very commendable picture. And he takes a candy bar out of his pocket, and he unwraps it, and he makes a bracha, and starts nibbling on the candy bar while he is reviewing his Torah learning, waiting for a bus. Wow. And he takes the candy wrapper, crumples it up, and drops it on the ground. When 2 steps away is a trash can. People see this scene at the bus stop, and it goes through some people's minds. This is what Torah teaches. This is what this person learned in yeshiva. What kind of education has he gotten? What kind of person is he? That is a grand desecration of God's name. I believe, and I'm not the only one, that this applies to a person with an appearance of religiousness, smoking in public. Aside from whatever prohibition there is in smoking, of which I am convinced it is of biblical nature, forbidden to do, put that aside. You really can't, but put it aside. Smoking in public. When you, by your deportment, by people who know you, by your dress and your presentation, are representing a religious person, and you are smoking in public, and this is something that our society today considers to be an improper thing to do, an unhealthy thing to do, very, very problematic. This lowers the esteem of Torah in the eyes of the beholder. That is a desecration of God's name, a chilul Hashem. I mentioned before how many of us grew up being FFBs, from birth, religious from childhood. We had many situations. I remember my parents would say to me, you're going to a baseball game this afternoon with your class. Remember that if you behave poorly, you're too loud or you're rude or whatever, people will see you and they will think, this is a yeshiva boy's behavior. This was a burden on a kid, and I remember feeling it that way, but it's an issue of Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem. Cannot overemphasize the effect that it has, both positive in the case of good behavior and negative in poor behavior, on the beholder. The beholder could be fellow Jews who maybe are not religious, and their opinion counts also. And it's a very sensitive kind of thing to do something that will bring disgrace to God's name, to Torah, to Judaism, or on the positive side, to be something that will bring honor. It happens in so many different ways. Returning change. You got overchanged. Clerk gave you extra money. A lot of people might pocket it. Many people will be proper and honest enough to say, you gave me 5 shekel too much, here it is. But in addition to being the right thing to do, it has the potential of sanctifying God's name. Because when they see something like this, some people say, this person learned the right thing. This person was brought up the proper way, and they see it as going hand in hand with one's Torah education. I don't know if I'm being over dramatic or I'm overemphasizing things, but it's definitely something to keep in mind, because it's the whole spectrum of behavior. You have Yehoreg Val Yavor, martyrdom, giving up your life for religion, so to speak. That's a Kiddush Hashem. And when you give your seat up to a lady in a bus, an old man, that could be a Kiddush Hashem too. And of course the opposite. I mentioned Parshat HaMoadim, the portion of the festivals. We're talking about Vayikra chapter 23, which goes through the full cycle. And a little interesting at the beginning, where it says, God says to Moshe, saying, speak to the people of Israel and tell them, Moadei Hashem, the festivals of God, asher tikru'u otam, that you shall declare, mikroi kodesh, as holy, elohim moadai. These are my festivals, says God. What does that mean, that you shall declare they are mine? This is basically our role in setting up the Jewish calendar, in sanctifying each month, each Rosh Chodesh of each month, which gives the sanctification, the Kedusha, to the special days within a given month. And we are empowered by God to determine when the holidays of God will be. That doesn't mean we could arbitrarily pick any time of the year or any time of the month for them. We're talking about the method called Kiddush HaChodesh, which we now practice really only in a very secondary fashion. We're talking about in the time of Sanhedrin with eyewitness testimony to the visibility of the first lunar crescent, the first visibility of the lunar crescent, and the sanctification. But that's the meaning of these are my holidays, the holidays of God, that you shall declare as holy, they are mine. Then the Torah says, 6 days you shall labor, and on the seventh day it is Shabbat Shabbaton, an exalted Shabbat, Mikra Kodesh, a holy day, Kol Malacha Lo Ta'asu, no manner of malacha may be done, Shabbat Hi Lashem, B'chol Moshvotechem, it is the day of Shabbat. This is why we refer to Shabbat in Kiddush as Rishon Hu L'Mikra'e Kodesh, the first of the holy days that are called holy in the Torah, namely Shabbat. And then the Torah proceeds. Ela Moadei Hashem Mikra'e Kodesh Asher Tikuro Otam B'Moadam. This is a pasuk that's borrowed for, by many people, for the Kiddush of Yom Tov morning. And what are they? It starts with the first month, Nisan, on the 14th of the month in the afternoon, we bring Korban Pesach. And on the 15th day of the month, we begin the 7-day celebration and observance of Chag HaMatzot, the festival of Matzah, which we call Pesach. And a little description of the sanctity of the first day and of the seventh day. And then God says to Moshe, say to the people of Israel and tell them when they come to the land, they shall cut the barley and bring a special barley offering on the day following the first day of Pesach. And from that point, Usfartem lochem imocharat ha-shabbat, you shall count miyom aviyachem et omer ha-tenufa, Sheva Shabbatot Tmimot Tihyena, 7 full weeks there shall be, until after the 7th Shabbat, when you get up to, but not including the number 50, you bring the gift of the 2 loaves to the Beit HaMikdash. The intervening 49 days are the counting of the Omer, which we still observe in symbolic form, in commemorative form, and according to some opinions, in actual fulfillment of the mitzvah. There is a dispute as to whether the mitzvah without a Beit HaMikdash is a Torah command, or it has been relegated to rabbinic command in order to commemorate the Mikdash. Some say one way, some say the other way. The fact is that Sfirat HaOmer, which we are past the midway point of, comes from Parshat Emor. That's where the mitzvah is presented. Then the Torah talks about Shavuot. And then after a seemingly unconnected insertion of a reminder of the agricultural mitzvot of Peah and of Leket, that provisions have to be given to the poor, the Torah continues with the other set of Chagim, namely Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. All the commentaries point out that this is not an unrelated issue, but that smack in the middle of the presentation of the holidays of the year, one has to be reminded that tzedakah, charity, and care for the poor is very much an important mitzvah holiday time, because their needs are greater than during the rest of the year, and our needs are greater, and people tend on holiday time to do things for themselves. They have to know that it's a very important thing also to provide for the poor. And you have the Arba Minim, the 4 species, Lulav and Etrog, Hadassim and Aravot, as well as the mitzvah to live in a sukkah. And as I mentioned earlier, all of this is followed by the command to take olive oil for the menorah, which many people see as an allusion to not only the actual menorah in the Beit HaMikdash, but the rededicated Mikdash in the time of the Chashmonaim, which produced Chanukah, and it gives Chanukah its little bit of biblical connection, as I mentioned earlier. Parshat Emor is chock full of mitzvot. There are others to discuss, no time to discuss them, just about enough time to say Shabbat Shalom Lehishtameah.